the Department of Asian and Near Eastern Languages at Brigham Young University and a department colleague of mine. John is an extraordinarily productive and accomplished scholar who has published on a breathtaking range of topics dealing with Egyptology, biblical studies, and the history of religions. On a personal note, I have been acquainted with John since he first entered Brigham Young University as a freshman from Lander, Wyoming, and began studying biblical Hebrew with me when I was a brand-spanking new faculty member at the university nearly 40 years ago. Professor Gee's presentation today is entitled Cherubim and Seraphim, Iconography in the First Jerusalem Temple. Professor Gee.
We come up with a picture in our minds of what happened. Elements of the resultant pictures will be drawn from our own background. The further the culture from which the text derives from our own, the further the mental picture will be from the truth. The biblical description of the first temple, Solomon's temple, comes from nearly 3,000 years ago. While the biblical text gives something of a floor plan of the temple, its laconic descriptions of the walls are our interest here. The descriptions, along with some recent archaeological discoveries, give us new insight into what the first temple was like in terms of its iconography. It's not what we might initially think. The two main iconographic images mentioned in the biblical text are cherubim and seraphim. We begin our look at the iconography of the first temple with Isaiah's visit to the temple. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw my Lord seated on a high throne, and his glory filled the temple. Seraphim stood above, each having six wings. With two he covered his face, and with two he covered his feet, and with two he flew. And this one cried to that one and said, "Holy, holy, holy is Yahweh of armies. All of the earth is filled with his glory." From Isaiah's description, we know that the seraphim were located above the throne. We know that they had multiple sets of wings. But what is a seraph? A seraph comes from the Hebrew verb seraph, meaning to burn. It has been suggested that the term signifies glowing, burning, or the glowing one, the burning one. It has alternatively been suggested that these are composite creatures, or as having human form. To solve this puzzle, we need to take a more careful look at the text and the iconography from ancient Israel. We have an earlier account that describes a seraph from the account of the wanderings of the children of Israel in the wilderness. The children of Israel set out from Mount Hor by the way of the Sea of Reeds to skirt the land of Edom. But the people grew restive on the journey, and the people spoke against God and against Moses. "Why did you make us leave Egypt to die in the wilderness? There is no bread and no water, and we've come to loathe this miserable food." The Lord sent seraph serpents, Hanahashim Hasraphim, against the people. They bit the people, and many of the Israelites died. The people came to Moses and said, "We sinned by speaking against the Lord and against you. Intercede with the Lord to take away the serpent, Hanahash, from us." And Moses interceded for the people. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Make a seraph figure, seraph, and mount it on a standard. And if anyone who is bitten looks at it, he shall recover." Moses made a copper serpent, Nechash Hanachoshet, and mounted it on a standard. And when anyone was bitten by a serpent, Hanachash, he would look at the copper serpent, Nechash Hanachoshet, and recover. The serpents that bit the people were the seraphim. They were poisonous. Israel has 17 poisonous snakes, one a lapid, 8 lamprophytes, and 8 vipers. Egypt has 9 poisonous snakes, 4 lapids and 5 vipers. They, in Egypt, they are also depicted with wings. To see them represented iconographically, we need only look for iconography of snakes with wings. And it happens that we have a number of seals and sealings that depict snakes with wings. They include one belonging to Elishama, son of the king, 8th to 7th century, one belonging to Zechariahu, priest of Dor, 8th century, another one belonging to Abiyahu, also 8th century, one belonging to Elishama, son of Palulul, no date, another with a broken inscription, no date, one belonging to Yahmulyahu, son of Maaseyahu, one belonging to Yirmiyahu, son of Asael, and one belonging to Saada, one belonging to Shaphat, oops, a little fast, and one belonging to Domla, with no date, and one belonging to Samak, son of Sepanyahu, also with no date. It is significant that although most of these are not dated, those that are date to the 8th century. These seals and sealings from Israel match the biblical description of the seraphim. But the serpents depicted on the seals and sealings are all cobras with the spreaded hood, elapids in the Nadja family, and none of which is actually native to Israel. And this is also true from amulets from Israel. The Israelite iconography is actually taken from Egypt. And the snake depicted on them is the Nadja Nubii, the Nubian spitting cobra. And this is clear from Egyptian depictions that are colored, as the colored is closer to the Nubian spitting cobra, Nadja Nubii, than it is from the Egyptian cobra, Nadja Hadja. In Isaiah's account, the seraphim are located above the throne, and this is also taken from Egyptian temple iconography, where rows of serpents are depicted above the shrine of the deity. During the reign of Hezekiah, he also broke into pieces the bronze serpent, Nahash HaNehoshet, that Moses had made. For until that time, the Israelites had been offering sacrifice to it. It was called Nechshon. Hezekiah lived at the end of the 8th century, and it may be more than coincidence that after the destruction of the bronze serpent, that the winged serpent ceased to be an object adorning Israelite seals. Another iconographic fixture of Solomon's temple are the cherubim. Cherubim appear in three contexts in the Hebrew Bible. The first is being placed as guardians for the tree of life. The second is their appearance in the temple, and the third is part of the heavenly ascent. Although the Bible states that the cherub had wings, until recently, discussion of the iconography of cherubim was largely guesswork. Recent publication of an inscribed throne, however, has settled the question. The throne was made from marble and is found in the Eshmun temple at Bustan Esh-Sheikh. This is not that picture, but is similar style. The inscription on it reads, Kesah Kerubim, the throne of the cherubim. The figures on either of the sides of the throne are described as sphinxes. They have lion bodies with human heads and wings. And it is also claimed that these life-size sphinx thrones are the prototypes that inspired the throne of Yahweh described in the Bible. While Phoenician workers were used in the construction of Solomon's temple and might have brought over some of their artistry to that structure, they were not involved in the construction of the earlier tabernacle. And this raises the question of what the difference was between the cherubim in the tabernacle and in Solomon's temple. In the tabernacle, cherubim are placed on the Ark of the Covenant on either side of the throne. Unlike Phoenician cherubs, where the cherubs face the same way that the individual sitting on the throne, on the Ark of the Covenant, they faced each other. God sat between the cherubim. And the cherubim were also placed on the inner face of the outer curtains of the sanctuary of the tabernacle so that they would show on the inside but not on the outside of the tabernacle. Cherubim are also placed on the veil of the temple. The fabric in both cases is of the highest quality, choshev, the same quality which is reserved for the high priest's ephod, the breastplate. While the Ark of the Covenant was brought over from the tabernacle, the curtains were not brought over. Instead, in Solomon's temple, the cherubim, 10 cubits high, were placed in the Holy of Holies. Were the Phoenician-style cherubim used in Solomon's temple? Well, Phoenician-style cherubim are winged sphinxes. They have a human head, a lion body, and wings. Thus, some biblical scholars have claimed that cherubim had the bodies of winged lions and human heads. But when we look at the iconography in the Israelite glyptic repertoire, we see something slightly different. Yes, you can get, on Israelite ceilings, cherubs depicted as human-headed, like this belonging to Hannah, no date, or this one from Shulamit, which has no date, but whose authenticity is also questioned. More likely, they are to be falcon or eagle-headed, like this belonging to Abba, 8th century. Note the bird's head, the Egyptian double crown, the wings over a lion's body, and a plant in front of it. This one belongs to Asaph. It's also 8th century. This belongs to Gegi. There's no date. This is to Hosea, 8th century. Zakur, son of Hosea, also 8th century. Himni, Good Book of Mormon name, 8th century. Hananyahu, no date. Jehoiakim, 8th century. Yotan, no date. Yahazak, 8th to 7th centuries. Peha, 8th century. Rama, no date. And Shema, no date. We also find a few other ones which we'll include in here just for the sake of completeness, such as human-headed bull-like figurines that belong to Yahyahu, date. One representation shows a figure in Egyptian dress spearing a falcon head figure belonging to Yakamyahu, 8th century. And these seem to represent Israelite cherubim, and they're usually shown with the head of an eagle or a falcon rather than a human head. And this indicates that the Israelites were not generally using Phoenician iconography. One thing to note about the depictions of the cherubims on Israelite seals: in the front of the cherubim is usually an Ankh sign. And this is in Egyptian, this is the sign for life. And because the cherubim guarded the way to the tree of life, this may be a representation of the tree of life. The Hebrew term cherubim seems to come from a Semitic root attested in Akkadian, karabu, to pray. The particular form seems to be cognate with Akkadian karubu, honored person. But its definition fits more with karibu, which is a divine image making the gesture of adoration. It has been hypothesized, quite plausibly, that this is the origin of the Greek groups, griffin, which in turn is the origin of the English word griffin. It has been noted that the cherubim in the Bible are hardly the round-faced infant cherubim known in Western art. So how did the cherubim change from being depicted as a winged falcon-headed lion to a baby with wings? The process actually starts in biblical times. When Nebuchadrezzar conquered Jerusalem and destroyed the temple, the cherubim disappeared both from the walls and the Holy of Holies and the Ark of the Covenant. The cherubim are associated with Revelation, since God spoke to Moses from between the cherubim. And it is in this context that we can appreciate the description of the cherubim in Ezekiel. For Ezekiel, the cherubim appear when he sees God. Ezekiel provides two descriptions of the cherubim. Ezekiel was of the priesthood lineage and may have seen the temple when young, but does not describe the cherubim as they appear in Solomon's temple. Instead, they have changed a bit. Ezekiel says that the cherubims were the living creatures that he saw at the Chabur River. In that depiction, he describes them as the image of four animals, and this is their form. They had the image of a man, and each had four faces and four wings to each of one of them. And their feet were straight feet, with the sole of their feet was like the sole of a calf's foot, and sparkling like polished bronze. And the hands of a man were under their wings on the four sides, and their faces and their wings were on their sides. And the likeness of their faces were the face of a man, and the face of a lion on the right side, and the face of an ox on the left, and the face of an eagle on the back side. Where the cherubim in Solomon's temple had the face of a falcon or an eagle, Ezekiel's cherubim had multiple faces. As David Halpern put it, Ezekiel's hayot do not look very much like cherubim. The hayot have basically human bodies and animal faces. Cherubim have the reverse. Ezekiel, coming in the Babylonian exile, represents a first garbling of the depiction of the cherubim. The cherubim were not part of the rebuilt temple of Zerubbabel, and their understanding and imagery was forgotten. It has been argued that without the presence of the cherubim and the Ark of the Covenant, the temple could have led only a shadowy existence and lacked a center of gravity. But the second temple lacked both and yet still had some gravity. For Jews of the Second Temple period, the cherubim, which were no longer part of the architecture, faded into the background and were not depicted. The real change in iconography, however, came with Philo. For Philo of Alexandria, the cherubim were to be construed allegorically as representing the movements of the whole heavens, the cherubim on the right representing the outmost sphere of fixed stars, and the one on the left was representing the inner sphere with moving planets. He alternately considered the cherubim as the two hemispheres of the heavens. To an even higher allegory, which derives, Philo says, from his own thought, is that cherubim represented goodness and authority. But mostly the cherubim were, quote, the winged and heavenly love of the gracious God. Philo uses the term eros here, which is noteworthy for two things. The first is the love of God is determined eros here, which is not the way that modern theologians have erroneously taught us to consider the love of God. The second end is that Greek iconography, eros, love, along with hemeros, yearning, are portrayed as winged youth and later also as child booty. In the history of art, over time, eros grows young. He begins as a fairly grown-up boy in the archaic period, as a young boy in classical art, and becomes the playful puto of the Hellenistic age. A gem from late antiquity shows Philo's conception with two erotes representing the cherubim in a depiction of the Ark of the Covenant. In the late antique world in the West, the cherubim are given the appearance of four living creatures of Revelations 4, 6 through 7. In the East, the four heads and the four wings of Ezekiel 1:10. Illustrated manuscripts were promoted in the West under Pope Gregory the Great, but not in the East until Empress Theodora sanctioned them, so much later time. Thus, the chain of transmission for the tradition was broken, and the original depiction was lost. It was then left for another tradition to supplant the original one. The cherubim were placed outside the Garden of Eden to protect the way of the Tree of Life. The verb used here, shmor, means to keep, watch over, take care of, preserve, protect, observe an order, stick to an agreement, keep an appointment. The association with the Tree of Life is preserved in the iconography as the cherubim are depicted in front of an ankh sign representing life. The garden story was part of the law, which was read every 7 years at the temple during the Feast of Tabernacles. The cherubim are also depicted at the veil guarding the entrance to the Holy of Holies. In both the Garden of Eden and the temple, the cherubim guarded the way to the presence of God who sat on a throne of cherubim. Ezekiel takes this horizontal arrangement and makes it vertical. The cherubim still guard the way to God, but God has to be reached through a heavenly ascent. To sum up, the cherubim and seraphim are two decorative motifs that appear in Solomon's temple. The medieval and modern imagining of these figures are notably off the mark. When we look at the iconography from ancient Israel, we find that these two images are among the more common found. They are notably not images of anything otherwise viewable that is in the heavens above or in the earth beneath or that is in the waters under the earth. Thus, they did not fall under the interdiction of the Ten Commandments. Both served as guardians of the presence of God. The strangeness of the imagery should remind us that much of what we imagine about the divine realm may be different than we suppose. The temple, however, can serve as a corrective to that.